Robinhood Radio presents Between the Stacks, a weekly chat about our local libraries.
I'm Meg Schur, the executive director of the Hunt Library in Falls Village, and I'm here with Leslie Battis, the assistant director at the Norfolk Library. Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
And we're here to talk today about the funding cuts for libraries that have been issued under the Trump administration over the last couple of months. Leslie and I are going to talk about what this could potentially mean for both of our libraries, but even in this week's timeline, things have changed. So I wanted to start by going through what has been happening in terms of federal and state library funding over the last few months. So on March 14th, under the Continuing the Reduction of Federal Bureaucracy executive order that was issued by President Trump, the IMLS, the Institute of Museum and Library Services, all of its staff was put on leave. The IMLS provides funds to support libraries across the United States, including the Connecticut State Library, which provides grants and services to local libraries through our state, including both the Norfolk and the David M. Hunt Libraries. On April 2nd, the Connecticut State Library received notification that their Library Services and Technology Act grants to state was terminated, effective April 1st. Connecticut was singled out, along with two other states, to have this funding cut. And no reason was given for this funding cut. On May 1st, a federal court granted a temporary restraining order to block the Trump administration's dismantling of the Institute of Museum and Library Services. And I believe that since May 1st, another court has also granted a restraining order in response to a lawsuit filed by the American Library Association. But then again, on May 2nd, the Trump administration released its fiscal year 2026 federal budget proposal, and that budget proposal completely eliminated the budget for the Institute for Museum and Library Services. So this week, we have some other updates. On May 5th, the Connecticut State Library received notification from IMLS that its LSTA Grants to States grant for this year, which had previously been rescinded, was reinstated. And the State Library also was notified that this grant for 2025, fiscal year 2025, next year, would also arrive shortly. There was no reason given for the reinstatement, just as there was no reason given for the grant's initial termination. So while the state grants to Connecticut have been reinstated, seemingly for this year and for next year, there is still in the budget for next year. The budget still includes a total dismantling and no budget for the Institute for Museum and Library Services. So that's a quick breakdown of what's happened over the past couple of months in terms of funding. It's true to say that it feels a little bit like a ping pong match here. And that things are going back and forth, and I think uncertainty is a word that comes to mind when I think about federal funding to libraries right now. Leslie, I think you would probably agree.
I do. That was the word I had written down. As I said, there is more uncertainty to deal with now. Mm-hmm. And I thought you did a great synopsis of the ping pong match back and forth with the funding. That was really good. I think that the challenge now is that how do you budget not knowing where you'll be in the 2026 time frame?
Right. And Leslie, how is the Norfolk Library, or could potentially the Norfolk Library be affected by these federal and state funding cuts?
I think that we have decided that the biggest issue for us, as with many libraries in the Northwest Corner, is the loss of the interlibrary loan service.
Absolutely.
Because we are smaller libraries in this area, we don't have the space considerations to hold a large collection, and so interlibrary loan is really appreciated by our patrons so that they can get the books that they want to read.
Right.
So that's the biggest impact for us. We are an association library, which in this instance perhaps is helpful for us.
Mm.
But yes, I don't know if you had other issues for your library other than the interlibrary loan.
Yeah. So We are also an association library. For anyone who doesn't know, there are two types of libraries: municipal, meaning they're run by their municipality or their town, and often funding is all of their funding comes from their municipality. Association libraries are not run by their town. They don't receive all of their funding from their town. Often they receive a part of their funding from their town, and a lot of the other funding is raised through fundraising. And I assume that's the case for you, Leslie.
It is, and oftentimes we will talk about, I know you and I have talked about how fundraising and challenges with that, but at least it's something we have a bit more control over, I guess.
Yes, certainly, that is a plus for sure. One thing I want to, yes, interlibrary loan is a big concern, especially at our library. We are small, same things that you said, but the other thing that we have that's concerning is that we are the interlibrary loan hub for the Housatonic Valley Regional High School.
So
they don't have their own, they don't send their own things out. So all of the books that students and faculty want to get that are not within their own collection come through the Hunt Library. So that would be a big loss to our high school to not be able to receive all kinds of materials. It's not just books. They also get DVDs for film classes, all kinds of things that are funneled through our library. And that's a great way that we're able to collaborate with the high school library. There are a couple other things I wanted to touch on that could possibly be impacted by the state library losing funding if that does happen, because who knows? You know, it's changing week to week. Mm-hmm. I would say that a good portion, maybe two-thirds of the professional development that the staff at the David M. Hunt Library participates in is through the Connecticut State Library, and it's all free.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, there are tons of webinars that are really helpful and all kinds of timely things, I would say, every week. You know, we can't go to all of them, but they probably offer 2 to 5 different professional development webinars for staff that are really helpful. The other thing I wanted to highlight is that 2 years ago, we were the recipients of a partnership with Libraries Without Borders that was funded both in part by the Connecticut State Library and IMLS. 5 other libraries in Connecticut were part of this partnership to look at how we could increase our ability to bring library services to our community. And that project would not have happened without federal and state funding. And that's made a big difference for us. It allowed me to complete a full weed of our collection, which had not happened, to bring in new, more current books, to make things more accessible to patrons. We were able to put in Village Voices, which is a fun exhibit on the lawn and virtually on the library website, which highlights stories of Falls villagers. Mm-hmm. And we also were able to do a little bit of a renovation in the building, and the most notable part of that renovation was opening up our kids section. You see it right when you walk in the door, and it makes it a much more welcoming place. It also increases our capacity to have kids programs with larger amounts of kids, and it makes it a more welcoming space. So those are big things that have impacted our library positively in the last 2 years that would not have happened without this funding.
The funding is so important, and I know that Norfolk Library and your library are both working with a group of libraries in the northwest corner about starting a digital navigator program.
And
we have the funding for 2 years, but then, you know, what happens after that?
Right, and there was we've been working on this project for a number of years, getting ready, and it was unclear until 2 weeks ago, I think, whether or not the funding was going to come through at all.
Yes.
And so we were really relieved to hear that funding was still happening, and we're able to move forward, hopefully, with that project. And I think that in and of itself lends itself to the uncertainty of this time and funding for libraries.
Yes. Yes, I think that we can only hope that the need is seen and that the funding is restored in that 2026 budget.
Yes, I agree. Leslie, is there anything else you wanted to say about this before we move on to books?
No, I think we've covered it. Now we can move on to books.
Great. Leslie, what are some of the most requested books at your library in the last couple of weeks?
The three that I saw were The Fisherman's Gift by Julia Kelly.
Mm.
I would like to read that one, but I haven't been able to get my hands on it yet. And the other two are The Story She Left Behind by Patty Callahan Henry and The Crash by Frieda McFadden.
Oh, nice.
And
ours
how about
don't
you?
Overlap today. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
go ahead.
Interesting. They don't overlap today.
No, the new David Baldacci is our most requested book. It's called Strangers in Time, and it just came out last week, but I have a line.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that was exciting. Have you read any of the most requested books?
No, like I said, I want the Fisherman's Gift, but there's a line, so to speak, and so I always wait a little bit on that one.
Right, that's very nice of you. Sometimes I sneak in if I know I can read something in just a couple of days before it goes out to the general public. It's one of the perks of the job.
Yes, it is.
What have you been reading recently, Leslie, that you've been enjoying?
I'm reading a book called The Lilac People by Milo Todd. And it's an historical fiction book, and it's billed as a moving and deeply humane story about a trans man who must relinquish the freedom of pre-war Berlin to survive first the Nazis and then the Allies while protecting the ones that he loves. And I have learned so much about this. I haven't finished the book yet. It's the type of book that you read a bit, and then ponder, and then read a bit, and then ponder. And but I hadn't realized that homosexuals and transgender people had such freedom before the war.
Oh, interesting.
Tremendous freedom, the most freedom of all of Europe, the United States. And then, of course, the Nazis came to power, and the parallels between the treatment of the transgender people and the homosexual people is with the Jewish people is just spot on.
Mm-hmm.
But after the war, the transgender people were not safe because they were seen as illegal, and so they were arrested.
Oh, God.
Right. So that's where the book picks up. The book starts 2 weeks after the end of the war in Europe, just when Bertie and Sophie think they are safer. But then they learn that the Allies are imprisoning transgender people because it's illegal in Germany, and the story is how they adjust and learn to survive and flourish. So far, very interesting.
That's fascinating, and so many parallels to what's happening today. I've been finding the more historical fiction I've been reading, which is one of my favorite genres, the more lessons I've been pulling to what's happening in today across different time periods.
I agree. How about you? What are you reading?
So I just finished Good Dirt by Charmaine Wilkinson.
Oh, yeah.
Wilkerson. I don't know if you read Black Cake. I really enjoyed that book. And Good Dirt is very different. It takes place currently. I mean, they go back. She does have the same kind of generational ancestor kind of look back. You get to see people's history in a way that, family's history in a way that I really enjoyed. And the main female character is descended from one of the first freedmen in the state that she's living in. And they do a great job Charmaine does a wonderful job of exploring the issues of class and race and how they intertwine. The main character is an affluent Black woman who is engaged to an affluent white man. And how does affluence look different, you know, in different races? What are the expectations? And I really enjoyed it. And also the main character does a lot of kind of like finding herself, who she is and what she wants. And I always enjoy a good female protagonist really kind of coming to a better understanding of herself in a novel. So I really enjoyed that. And I've been on my nonfiction listening list. I just finished The Radium Girls by Kate Moore. Have you read that?
I did read it. And oh my goodness, what did you think?
I mean, I found it to be fascinating and wonderful and horrifying.
And horrifying, yes.
All at the same
horrifying.
Time. So The Radium Girls follows women who worked painting watch faces in the 1910s, 1920s, and they were painting them with brushes held in their mouths or licking the brushes, and the paint was full of radium. Radium was supposed to be this wonderful new substance, and all of these women ended up getting horribly ill and having their bodies disintegrate and getting these terrible cancers and dying because of the radium. And the book looks at both the kind of lawsuits and getting the company this hard-fought you know, hard-won fight eventually to get the company to take responsibility for endangering these women, because it turns out that they did kind of know mm-hmm. that this wasn't a good thing for them to be doing, and they kept it from their mm-hmm. workers. And also, I was listening to the afterword because I just finished it this week, and the author was talking about how they were inspired by some other books they had read that talked more about the science and the legal aspect behind this case, but not the women themselves. So this author, Kate Moore, does a great job of looking at and exploring individual women's stories. What happened to them, how it affected their family. I believe there was one family where three daughters worked in the factory and died
yes.
from working with radium.
Yep.
And it was a great reminder of why we have worker protection laws.
Yes. And I thought that was so important to show, as you said, about the not just the high level, but the individual person. I can't have a child, you know, my teeth
right.
are falling out. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, and the women who are trying to get up the stairs to church and can't because one of their legs has atrophied 4 inches shorter than the other, and all she wants to do is pray for the health of her family. Really poignant, mm-hmm. emotional portrayals of these women that this author was able to show. So I highly recommend that one.
Yes. There is also a young adult version that we have.
Oh, cool.
And I say it's... the lighter version, it's not quite as explicit mm-hmm. in the women. It does still describe all of that, but it's not quite as explicit. So if someone is interested but maybe not able to handle some of the gory details, I think that is a good option.
Right. I think the audiobook was 18 hours long, which is longer than I usually do, and I had to really power through the last 4 hours to make
yes.
it before it returned itself.
Well, good job.
Thank you. Thank you. I do feel like I should get a gold star for that. Leslie, what are some events that are coming up at your library? I wanted to say that I'm really excited about your cookbook club.
Oh, yes, yes. I was going to say we are excited also that we are starting a cookbook group. May 12th at 7 p.m. is our introductory meeting. And we have Barry Weber, who is a cookbook collector and cook extraordinaire, and he will lead the group. Thank goodness it's not me. And we'll meet monthly, and with each meeting focused on a different cookbook or a regional cuisine. And participants will check out a copy of the cookbook, try several recipes, and then bring a dish to the next meeting for a potluck.
Awesome.
And for Oh, sorry,
are you interlibrary loaning the cookbooks, Leslie?
Yes.
Another thing that interlibrary loan supports
exactly.
are all different kinds of book clubs.
Yeah. So for the introductory meeting, the participants are asked to bring their favorite topping for a dinner salad bar, and then we will discuss the logistics of the you know, what do you bring, you know, you need your serving utensils, you need this, you need that. So we'll discuss all of that and pick out the first cookbook.
Cool. That's so awesome. I'm really excited about that.
I am, too. And then we do have a concert on May 17th. It's Ensemble Obeid, and they will perform Mozart, Madame Farenc, and more, which is described as an exhilarating tour of chamber music from the salons of Vienna and Paris to the concert halls of New York. And that concert is at 5:30. It looks to be very, very good.
Nice.
And what about you, Meg?
So this Saturday, we have a program that I'm really excited about. Author Andrew Warburton has written a book called New England Fairies, and he's going to be here to talk about it Saturday, May 10th at 1 p.m. So I'm really excited about that. All kinds of different New England folklore around fairies and other kinds of magical creatures.
Oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, so I'm excited about that. We have a busy week next week. Tuesday, May 13th at 5:30, trivia is coming back to the library. I have a Falls Villager named Dave Parks who's going to run the Knowledge Gauntlet, Really Hard Trivia.
Ooh.
So if you find yourself to be a trivia buff, please come down and try your hand at these difficult questions.
I don't know about that.
I know. I'm not a trivia person. I am keeping score. There's no cost to play. You can bring your own snacks and drinks. We're going to limit teams to 6 people, and so we're excited to do that, and Dave's excited to try it out. It's something he's been wanting to do for a while. It was very generous of him to put in all the work to get it together. On Thursday, May 15th, we're having a film screening. The film is called Uprooting Addiction. It's a locally produced film about trauma, recovery, and addiction, and May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So this is a great time to be talking about all of these things. And after the film's about an hour, one of the producers of the film and some organizations that deal with addiction locally will be here with a panel. We're going to have refreshments, so it should be a really enlightening evening. And last but not least, we have a very popular homegrown plant sale at the library that happens in May, and this year it is May 17th and 18th from 9 to 3 p.m. We have all kinds of things, vegetables, perennials, geraniums in beautiful hanging baskets, courtesy of the Future Farmers of America at the high school. We have gardening tools and pots and all kinds of things. And so that will be on those 2 days. If anyone finds themselves dividing perennials or having plants that they would want to drop off, they can do that at the library on Friday the 16th. But so that's a really fun, wonderful weekend, and we're getting ready.
That sounds great. I love that idea.
Yeah, it's a fun one. We do it the same weekend as Trade Secrets, which ends up working out for us really well because often people are in town touring gardens, and so they can stop by and shop at our plant sale as well as Trade Secrets.
Well planned, Meg. Well
Thank
planned.
Thank you. Yes, I have wonderful volunteers who help run that program, and it is that sale, and they really know what they're doing, which is great because I don't know so much about plants.
What would we do without our volunteers?
I don't know. That's a great question. We are very fortunate to have wonderful volunteers.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much for chatting with me today, Leslie. This was really fun.
Thanks. It was. Thank you.
Between the Stacks is produced at the facilities of Robin Hood Radio 91.9 FM, Sharon, Connecticut.